TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I just have one question for you today. Can I borrow a shuttle?
I mean, sure. Any specific reason? You just need to go pick up some In-N-Out or something?
Yeah, that's it. Some In-N-Out, okay. Because, all this uncertainty here, it just made me a little bit peckish. And I know a great In-N-Out's not too far from the neutral zone. Just going to go pick some up. You want some?
Yeah. That's like my favorite In-N-Out, actually. They have a really fast drive-through. There's nothing better to soothe anxiety than a greasy burger and some fries and a milkshake.
Yeah, I always get the triple Romulan. It's on the the secret menu.
Yes. Yeah. Good. Although I hear, Pike also makes a great bison burger. So if you're looking to stop by his quarters, I think he's having a barbecue later this evening.
I think so. Speaking of cooking, let me ask you if this stood out to you as a commentary on what they do with this episode. Pike is there. He's cooking for Captain Batel. And he says, transforming leftovers into something tasty. He wasn't talking about Balance of Terror, was he? And they're transforming that into something tastier.
I don't think that. I mean, mainly because, too, remember he was talking about, what we had last night was so good. So then you take those leftovers and you turn them also into something good.
All right.
And so I took it as saying, like, both of these things are good. It's just an interesting use of something in a way you don't expect. So maybe you're absolutely right that we're going to unexpectedly use Balance of Terror to tell a new story. So I think you might be onto something. I mean, who knew this was going to be, the spaghetti Star Trek episode?
Yeah, who knew? I was just wondering because I thought maybe he had actually seen Balance of Terror and he remembered it because sometimes it feels like the characters may be Star Trek fans themselves. Spock actually uses the term prime history when he's talking to Pike, which sounds like something that we podcasters might say.
I mean, it does feel like he saw the JJ verse films, so it understands that idea of there being a prime universe and an alternate universe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so did Kirk here because, his dad was on the Kelvin, so.
That's true. Well, and we know from the Kelvin Universe movies that originally takes place in what we consider the Prime Universe, and it's the divergence doesn't come until Nero comes in. So apparently Kirk's dad was always on the Kelvin. So
he always was. All right, everyone. Let's get into the full-on discussion here as we wrap up our look at the first season of Strange New Worlds. This episode is A Quality of Mercy, and here is a very quick rundown. Getting a visit from your future self is rarely a good thing, but if your future self is supposed to be dead, well, you might have hopes for positive news. That's what Captain Pike thought when a silver fox and monster maroons strolled into his quarters. But soon he finds himself at the wedding of you and you in an alternate timeline in which a famous confrontation with Romulans plays out differently and very much the same. It's Balance of Terror Part 2 as we wrap up Strange New Worlds Season 1.
Or Chris, as I like to call it, the alternate terror.
The alternate terror. Mm-hmm. Were you expecting the alternate terror, Matthew, to close out the season? What did you think about this twist in the story?
Oh, my gosh. We started the season, obviously, with the existential crisis of Captain Pike knowing what his future is going to be, in the sense that he knows that he is going to end up in the wheelchair that we see him in and from TOS. What he obviously does not know is what's going to take place after that, because the cage itself hasn't happened. He doesn't know the full future, but he is quite aware of the ramifications. At least he knows some of them, that, you know, if he doesn't go through with this, there will be certain people that may die. And so I thought it was fantastic, actually, to kind of bookend the season with talking about Pike and his future. And in all honesty, finding a way to put to rest the question once and for all whether or not Pike will accept his fate, or if he will continue to kind of try and fight it. And it makes it so interesting because, you know, number one had told him, you know, maybe your future is what you make it. And really what we see here is that Pike cannot get out of this without destroying the universe as we know it. And I really appreciated this because in the end, Pike's sacrifice leads to a better world. Like him sacrificing himself, and not in the way that he thinks, right? His older self even tells him that. This is not in the way that he would have hoped it would happen, but it's still going to lead to a better world. In fact, the only opportunity for the world we know of Star Trek, the prime timeline, as Spock calls it here in this episode, is actually for Pike to make the sacrifice. Otherwise, in every other timeline, in some way, shape, or form, Spock is going to die, and therefore will irrevocably change the future, because as we know from TOS and the movies, and as well as TNG, Spock is a huge key to the universe turning out the way it should, because it's the partnership between him and Kirk and McCoy and the rest of the TOS cast that is going to make the future that we know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think I was not surprised at all for them to bookend the season with a story about Pike's fate. I was very happy this season that they were able to give us stories where they didn't dwell on that, but right. Because we opened that way, and because that was the impetus for the creation of the series in the first place, I probably would have been a bit disappointed if they hadn't revisited it here at the end. But the way they did it, I thought was, for me, it was unexpected. But like you say, for a series that I feel like so far, with the exception of the reimagining of the Gorn, has done a good job of honoring the original series and remembering what the stories were and the characterizations and everything surrounding that that created Star Trek in the first place. Remembering that and paying homage to it in a very respectful way, I think the series has done a good job. So to go back and take one of the most classic episodes and retell it, I thought was a very interesting thing to do, also a very tricky thing to do. And I think that they did a really nice job of it, especially if you pay attention to the details. The second time I went through this episode, it took me forever to watch it because I'm constantly stopping and comparing dialogue between Balance of Terror and what's going on here. Because, of course, I know Balance of Terror very well. I've seen it 100 times, but the dialogue felt very familiar. Like, okay, this is the line, this is the line, this is the line, but is it really exactly lifted? And I wanted to compare that. And so I did so, and some of it is just, it's like a 99.9% mirror.
Yes.
And I think that to do that, you have to both love the original, you have to know it very well, and you have to have this desire to pay great respect to it. And so that all comes back down to something that you said to me the other day when we're just chatting, which is that this episode is showing how important TOS is to Star Trek, which is something that I think it's becoming fashionable these days to kind of dismiss the original series as that tone-deaf TV show from the 60s that doesn't sit exactly the way you want it when you look at it through 2022 glasses. And You know, people don't like some of the actors now. People don't like William Shatner. So let's just dismiss what was done. But without it, we wouldn't have any of the Star Trek that we have these days. Mm-hmm. And I think here, they are highlighting the importance of that original material.
I could not agree more with you. As I watched this episode, and especially as we got to the end of the episode, and in all honesty, I actually thought that what we were going to see is that Kirk was going to be the one who sacrificed himself for Pike. And with the lack of Kirk being there, that would have been one of the big changes. But I thought it was a nice switch in the sense that they play it subtly that it's going to be Spock. But what you really come down to is the fact that without Kirk, without Spock, without them being the ones there on the bridge of the Enterprise in the Balance of Terror as we know it, the universe changes completely. And when you do that, what you're saying is that the crew of TOS and their actions in that series are pivotal to making the Star Trek that we know happen and making a better world. And I love that because you are reinforcing the importance of TOS as the foundation of Star Trek as we know it, which is phenomenal. And the fact that we would even have to defend that seems crazy to me. It would be like saying, oh no, we don't need the original Star Wars movies. Let's just forget those altogether and just make new story. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's just not possible. And so, and in the end, I think the biggest thing we see here is that by Pike not making this decision, he saves us from the worst monster maroon I've ever seen. So, therefore, saving the prime timeline monster maroon and saving us all, because I think we can all agree the monster maroon may be the most perfect Star Trek uniform ever created.
Yeah.
And this one from an alternate universe was just a clear abomination. And I know it's from an alternate universe. I'm just saying we were saved from it. And thank you know, the maker. Thank God.
Well, yeah, the monster maroons and the First Contact DS9 uniform, those are my two favorites by far. And
Amen.
Of course, the monster maroons were my favorites for years because we didn't have the others yet. And I know how much you love them. And when the light hit the shoulders of that uniform, mm-hmm. my instant thought was, Matthew is going to hate this.
Well, it wasn't just the shoulder, but I mean, the flap on the other side has this very strange angle to which makes the strap across the shoulder way too long. And it's just like, you know, the costume designer for The Wrath of Khan knew what they were doing to create symmetry in a uniform that just had something about it to which everybody could gravitate towards.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so yes, we were saved from that. But besides
let me just say though, the reason I thought that is that they have the texture in the pattern, which you've talked about before. Like,
awful.
Why do they have to put these textures and patterns in everything?
Yeah.
And I actually don't mind that pattern too much in the multicolor uniforms that we're seeing right now. But in a design like the Monster Maroon, it looks kind of odd.
Yeah. And I would agree with you in the sense that I think with the uniforms we're getting on the show normally, it's not bad. But that, it just felt like they went full hog with, let's just put as much texture on those shoulders and arms as we possibly can.
However, I think creatively, the one reason to do it is that you want that uniform for the audience visually to give a cue of where this character is from in terms of a timeline.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You want to have something that feels like a progression of the uniforms that we're mm-hmm. seeing right now.
Right.
And because those have the texture, you carry that forward. So I get that creatively, but it's not a great look. It's sort of like a, I don't know if it's disco or not, but it's sort of, it's a different take for sure.
Yeah, different,
a less sophisticated
different is a great
take.
Word for it. But I mean, you know, and I think it is really neat. And, you know, of course, we got both Kirk and Spock in this episode. And, you know, Kirk basically is wanting to do the same thing that he actually does in The Balance of Terror. And I thought that was really interesting. And really what, to me, a part of showing the importance of TOS, it also really showed the importance of knowing when to fight, you know, knowing mm-hmm. when to meet an enemy on their terms and not ours. And that's something that Spock here understands in this episode, because he backs up what Kirk wants to do. And it's something that Kirk instinctively kind of understands, which is if we don't meet them on a level to which they understand, they will see us as weak, and that will cause the war. And I think that there is something almost as a critique of our society, which is to say that there's only one way to do things. We have to meet everyone on this kind of lovey-dovey kind of track. And like that there are just some people that cannot be reasoned with, right? And the Romulans at this point are people that are not to be reasoned with. There happens to be one Romulan that we could have, but that's not indicative of all of Romulus. And you know, there's a point in the universe where a big change like that is ready to happen. But this is not that. And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, that's where, and especially since this is the first meeting between these two species in 100 years, you have to set the stakes first before you can kind of meet with peace. And so I just really appreciated that the way this episode, again, it's backing up what Kirk does originally, but I think it has just some interesting things to say about what we do and how we do it, and that there is more than just our thought process of how to do something. Like, and the almost like Kirk's solution then was the best solution. And in our chronological summary, we would think, oh, we would be much more enlightened. We need to handle this differently. Well, mm-hmm. if we do that, then you create a war that's worse than anything we've ever seen. You know, so I just really appreciate that. And in a lot of ways, this is backing up the idea that just because something happened in history and we think we might not agree with it, doesn't mean that we're right. Yeah. There's a lot being said there, and I just really appreciated it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about how in today's world, people have certain views about how to handle other countries in particular. I'm thinking of how they behave, how they view mm-hmm. human rights, for example, how things operate amongst the citizens of any particular country. I'm not singling out anyone. It's the more general idea of, like you say, we know a better way to do it. We'll go in, we would do this, and we think that that approach will get the result that we want. But yep. actually, like we see here with the Romulans, our approach may be viewed as a weakness to someone
right.
who yep. has designs on control. In mm-hmm. that particular case, you can look at someone like Putin and Russia, for example.
Right.
And, you know, what's happening in Europe right now, it's mm-hmm. a very dangerous situation, and the decisions being made by NATO are being made very carefully, because there are people who, when you see what's happening, of course, you want to go in and you want to change it, but leaders are understanding, you know, the decisions we make could have huge repercussions mm-hmm. for millions of people. Just like in this story right here.
Right.
So,
well, in understanding your enemy and how they think and how they will respond and how they will take something is very important. I mean, and that's something to which obviously TOS shows Kirk and his crew being very good at, whether it comes down to the Klingons or, you know, with the Romulans or anybody else that they run into. And it comes down it to put it another way, you know, when you have the idea of like love languages, right? And like if somebody is someone who really feels love when you give them words of affirmation, but all you're trying to do is, you know, give them lots of gifts, they might not feel the love the same way that you hope they are feeling it,
right?
And that's basically, it's the same kind of thing. You have to meet people where they are, not where you want them to be or where you are. And I think that's the thing which, you know, we see here. Pike wants to meet them where he would like things to be, but is that really where things are? Is that the reality on the ground? And I think Kirk has a better handle on where things actually are than Pike does. And that's what we see in the episode.
While we're mentioning Kirk, let's just talk about this portrayal of Kirk a little bit, because the one thing in this episode that even on the second watch still isn't really sitting that well with me is Paul Wesley's portrayal of Kirk. And, you know, I've been running it through my head and I've been thinking about the fact that this is an alternate timeline and he's the captain of the Farragut here. We know that he was stationed to the Farragut when he graduated from the academy, but here he's actually the captain, and events may have changed, led him down a little bit different path, so his character might be a little bit different. I've been trying to think of it that way, but I think maybe it's just the way that Shatner played Kirk, which is, of course, the Kirk that we've known for so long, and the way that Pine was able to capture Kirk in a way that, to me, feels completely like Kirk, but not like an imitation of Shatner, makes it very hard, I think, to see yet another person come in. And I am definitely going to have to warm up to Wesley if he's going to continue to be on the show, which I think is probably the case. As Kirk, what did you think about it?
I don't feel as strongly about it as you do. I think that I will have more of an opinion when we get to him not in a alternate timeline.
Yeah.
Because I'm wondering if that will change the way it's played a little bit, in the sense of if the actor will kind of add a little bit more of that kind of twinkle in your eye kind of thing, that just, and I think you're right in the sense that Shatner and Pine both have that instinctually, that's just who they are.
Yeah.
And so it's not really something that you can teach or like really get out of somebody that doesn't have it. So to me, though, I enjoyed his performance. I thought it was good. I thought it felt Kirk enough, but I felt like it had that there's a difference between this Kirk and the Kirk we would know, because he's not captain of the flagship of the Federation. You know, there isn't maybe as much pride in himself and his abilities that he might have because he had made it there, and that would change the character. And I'm hoping that that's the case. Regardless of if that ever happens, though, I believe that he can pull it off and play a good Kirk. Again, in all honesty, I just think the hardest part is that if you're not trying to do a straight up imitation, you know, it's a really hard role to play, because so much of who Kirk is comes down to who William Shatner is. In many ways, I feel like and these type of actors are kind of once in a generation. Harrison Ford's the same way.
Yeah.
Where it's like Harrison Ford just has a personality because it's who he is, that comes out in roles when he plays Indiana Jones or Han Solo. And you know, I thought Alden Ehrenreich, who was able to do a really good job of that in Solo, the film, but it's just a hard thing to follow with these guys. You know, it just is.
Yeah. I cannot imagine anyone else playing Picard, for example. So it's not just Kirk, but it's very difficult, I agree. to step in and play this role. I think, you know, Ethan Peck has done a really good job with Spock, I think. But maybe that role, because of the nature of the controlled Vulcan, the way Vulcans present themselves, this control, the speech pattern and so forth. And especially because he's playing a younger version than we were familiar with before, it may be a little bit easier to portray it in a way that we fans can accept that that is the character. Kirk, because he's like bigger than life in a sense, in the context of the original series, having him step in here, those are huge shoes to fill. And I'm not sure who could have done it in a way that we would have instantly felt, well, Kirk is on the bridge.
Well, and I do think you make a good point there in the sense that this is also a younger Kirk.
True.
Right? Yeah. And so there's a argument to be made that in playing him, he isn't going to be quite the same as the character that we would. This is 10 years before, you know, his first time as a captain on the Enterprise and where no man has gone before, you know, or at least the first time we see him as a captain of the Enterprise. Well, and so I think there's a lot that they can do here. That allows us to kind of grow into this character. So
it is in terms of the setting of Strange New Worlds, but in this episode, we've jumped ahead to the same year as Balance of Terror. So in that sense, this Kirk is supposed to be the same Kirk that we saw in Balance of Terror.
Yeah. But then again, I'd argue he's not the same Kirk because he's had a different life.
Yeah. Well, so, that was my point earlier about, I've been running it through my head in terms of how history has played out differently and then how that could affect his character as well. I mean, if you think about it, if he has been on the Farragut within kind of, let's say, more normal Starfleet operations rather than being out on this deep space five-year mission like the Enterprise, which it doesn't exactly line up here either, but for the sake of just imagining this, that could also change his character, because if you're put in a situation where you're more of a leader cut off from the others in the fleet compared with being more part of the group, that also would push you to mature and evolve, I think, in a way that would change your character.
Right. Well, as we talked about, this talks about the importance of TOS, the importance of the character of Kirk and the importance of the character of Spock, but it also helps us see the importance of those two characters together.
Yeah.
Working together. And so the Kirk we know by the time of Balance of Terror is that Kirk as well, because he has Spock by his side.
Right.
So I think there's that part of it too. And
that's
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
All of these things. What I love about us having this conversation and just this episode in general is that you are continually reinforcing how important what happened needs to still happen. Like in the end of this idea of like Pike's future is faded. Mm-hmm. Well, it's faded because the rest of this is faded too. And if it doesn't happen, well, the Star Trek universe as we know it is really screwed.
Right. So that point about Spock and the ultimate revelation here, the reason that the older Pike sends himself into this alternate timeline so he can see the events play out. Spock is injured. And then Chapel says, even if he survives, he may never be the same, which is what happens to Pike in our prime timeline. Right. Where he's injured, he survives, but he's never the same. He's confined to this wheelchair. And this episode reinforces, like you said earlier, the important role that Spock plays in history, stretching not only from this time, but all the way through to the unification era. And the title of this episode, Equality of Mercy, is a reference to The Merchant of Venice by Shakespeare. And in The Merchant of Venice, Portia gives a speech about the quality of mercy. And there's part of her speech that I feel like describes what happens here with what Pike is trying to do from the beginning when he's going to write the letter to discourage the boy from joining Starfleet and what happens to Spock at the end. And she says, though justice be thy plea, consider this, that in the course of justice, none of us should see salvation. And so Pike is trying to, here I think of justice as being finding a way to avoid the accident. And here he's trying to change history, but it costs Spock his life. But if he doesn't change history, it's going to cost Pike his life. Maybe neither of them die, but they're both forever changed. And I feel like that plus another part, which is, of course, there's no time crystal in the time of Shakespeare, but the speech also talks about the throned monarch better than his crown. His scepter shows the force of temporal power. And we get that here with the older Pike and the time crystal and the ability to send Pike forward. So I just thought those were some interesting bits from the source material that gives us the title.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, I think the best Star Trek in many ways is Shakespearean. That's, you know, where all of, I think, our best episodes kind of come from in any of the Star Trek series is when they kind of mirror the beautiful kind of melodrama that, you know, Shakespeare was able to create. And I think what's really interesting is that this is a difficult question for a very scientifically based society, one that kind of eschews faith or anything else, the idea of something being fated or being needed for the greater good, that even something that seems perceivably what we might think of as evil, but actually is good from a certain point of view, is where I think, you know, a lack of being able to have the idea of fate, providence, or God, or any of those things, which really, I think, makes those things easier to swallow. And here, you know, Pike specifically and literally learns that by his deformment, a better world happens. And so that out of something what we consider bad comes good is incredible. I mean, it reminds me of very much the story in the book of Genesis, where the character of Joseph, who you know probably as the coat of many colors guy, you know, when his brothers come to him in Egypt, and he's the prime minister now of Egypt, and they don't realize it's him. And then he finally reveals himself and he says, you know, what you meant for evil, God used for good. And it's that kind of thing. That's what we're learning in this episode, is that what we would consider evil can actually be used for good. And that's I think, for a more secularized society or just kind of naturalistic society, it's hard to swallow those ideas. But, you know, Star Trek has always kind of played with those ideas. So it was interesting to see here, and I really liked that. And, like, we learn, if anything else happens, Spock dies, and the universe is going to be the worse for it. Again, this constant reinforcement of the importance of Spock, the importance of Kirk, and the importance of them being together.
Yeah, and the importance of Pike, because
absolutely.
If Pike does not go through with the future that he's seen, then his older self explains that in every timeline, Spock dies or is injured, right? He cannot carry out the things that he ultimately does that secure the future that we see in Star Trek, that we aspire to, this future, this better place that is, for the most part, free of conflict. I guess of course, we get conflict with the Borg and Klingons and so forth for the sake of drama. But for most people living in the Federation in that future, I think they're safe and secure and more comfortable because of the ultimate efforts of Spock. And whereas, like you said, this highlights the importance of Kirk and Spock and the two of them being together, the linchpin for all that happening is Pike's path to his future that we saw in the cage and which was sealed with the time crystal on Borath, which Pike accepted that at the time also to save the future, to save others. You know, he got the time crystal. He accepted that he's going to see this future and he can't change it, but he was doing that to save everybody. And I think here he has understood now that he has to go through with that to once again save everybody. And yep. So he is a very important linchpin to the Star Trek universe and one who, prior to Star Trek Discovery Season 2, we had seen very, very little of.
Yeah. I can't say personally I love the time crystal.
It feels I don't like a little the time crystal like, concept either. But
too
but,
much like yeah. the dark crystal or something like that. It just feels way too fantasy.
Exactly. You know, it's too fantasy for Star Trek yeah, for me. Yeah. But anyway, I go with it because it's part of the story. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that was the beauty of, you know, and people probably could be yelling at us like, well, you love the orb and you love orbs and, you
probably.
Know, but that is so well, I think, set in the sense that there is a quote unquote scientific explanation
yeah,
for
it. I think they do
There's
tie
a,
it in.
A religious yeah. explanation for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, then what you want to believe about it is in the middle. And this just, again, it just feels like a fantasy element we kind of popped out
it's
of.
Just
any...
It's a plot tool, right? That's all the time.
And that's the yeah. thing I think that bothered me the most is it yeah. is it just like, ooh, plot tool movement.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Chris, one of the things that I kind of liked about the episode and I just thought was really well done, there were a few things that, and we talked about the way in which it was mirroring TOS, but I loved how they had the outpost have their own emblem.
Yes, you know? I put that in my notes.
Yeah, they have their own insignia.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
And I'm wondering if, so far in season one, we haven't really had interaction with other ships. There's the Farragut in this episode, but I wonder if they're going to carry that forward in
I
future
hope so.
Seasons and show us how each ship had its own insignia originally. I think that's yeah. something that older fans, of course, know. I think newer fans are not even aware that that's the origin of the Delta in the first place, that it was the Enterprise's symbol.
And I also, I mean, there's a lot of mirroring of lighting, you know, and especially Bounce to Terror, they had that like spotlight around Kirk's eyes a lot.
And that's
kind of
really cool how they did it in this one.
Yeah. So I thought just those little nods, which again, this is one of those things where you can truly tell that they are paying attention to that episode and that, you know, even though some the ship looks updated and everything and all that, that they're doing everything that they can to mirror the TOS where they can, where it fits in with a more modern aesthetic. And so I think all of that made me really happy.
And leading the charge in that area is the Jefferies tube.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because yep. that yeah. is classic, the way that they have been portraying that.
Yep.
Yeah, the
scenes we've talked
here,
about that before, and it's like, it legitimately is that. I mean, it's so funny.
Especially in this episode, in the overhead shot, you know, and going down, and they really are yep. paying attention to the way things looked originally. And also in this episode, a lot of the scenes, the Romulan bird of prey coming in, the way it's firing, the way Hansen's talking on screen from the station,
yeah.
the explosion... Yep. The revelation that the Romulans look like Vulcans, the bridge crew turning to look at Spock. It's shorter. They don't linger on it as long as they do in the original, but they're very much throughout this episode mirroring not only dialogue, but framing and, like yes. you said, lighting and so forth to really make you feel like you are back in that story in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the way that the setup I thought was brilliant. The moment that he's standing there at the wedding and the fact that the first thing that we see is the wedding of Angela Martine and Robert Tomlinson. And he doesn't know their names, mm-hmm. but he's there. But the moment yep. you see that, like if you know the Balance of Terror, you realize instantly what you're in for, where he is, what's mm-hmm. going on.
Yes.
And I thought that was really well done.
I also love that too. You know, I was a little disappointed that, you know, in the Enterprise originally, there is a chapel. And I always appreciated that idea that Starfleet had not gotten away from the idea that there were still people of faith.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just disappointed that it was taking place in, you know, the engine room. And I was like, who hasn't? Seriously? So that was really frustrating for me. But I did love the fact that, you know, he is put into that moment and it creates a little bit of humor where there's, you know, there's just not a lot of humor in this episode,
yeah.
which is understandable. But I really appreciated that. I thought it was great.
Yeah. But he handled it well.
No, 100%. So.
Yeah. Other little things, this is not important, but little things where they mirrored the original dialogue, but they updated it a bit so that it is in line with how Star Trek evolved over the years, just Spock giving the headings. In the original, he says his heading is now 111 Mark 14. And here he says the heading is now 111 Mark 14. You know, very tiny little thing, but it's what you expect in Star Trek today. And back then, they just had a different way of delivering yeah. those coordinates. But anyway, what are your final thoughts on this one, and what's your rating?
Oh, man. I'm just hard-pressed to find anything in this episode that's not good. You know, even with our conversations about some of the little nitpicks we have here and there, I don't love time crystals or whatever. You know, all that stuff I can let go of because I think this episode does such a great job of building on everything that we've gotten to, and it sets up the next season. You know, I think I might have a whole other subject for us to talk about before we get completely to other ratings, because we're setting up the next season with what's going to happen with Una. And all of this is going to be about getting her back.
Yeah.
Because it's very clear to me from the other timeline, something happened with Pike because he never got her back.
Right.
And that his not accepting his fate changed him in such a way that he didn't do what he's going to do to get her back, because we know she has to be back because she's in the cage. And so I really like that. And, you know, a question that you had had, Chris, and I guess got to ask this before we get out of here, is you asked me about whether or not I thought that this might be them leading to basically soft launching into
TOS. Oh, yeah. We
TOS.
Talked about that in a just chatting. We talked about
yeah.
that.
And,
yeah, because they seem to be moving characters who are not in the cage out and slowly bringing other characters in. And we already knew from the announcement, this is actually another point. They announced the casting of Paul Wesley as Kirk for season 2 of Strange New Worlds, and then they snuck him in here at the end of season 1.
Right.
I thought they did a good job of keeping that secret, which is hard to do in today's world. But clearly, they have plans for him coming up. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that happens personally, because we have such a long time period. And after this episode, it's like, how could you do that And unless you're going to say, you know, Kirk is, you know, when we meet him in the Where No Man Has Gone Before, they're actually on like year three of the 5-year mission. So we're, you know, so you could do something like, I mean, yeah, you could fudge things like that. But it seems like to me, you have too much time to try and force that. And there's no reason to force that, especially with the way this episode reinforced how important TOS is as the foundation. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be a huge mistake. And unless, again, they fudge it and say, yeah, well, when we met Kirk, he was really on, you know, the third year of the 5-year mission. And so we can do the first 2 years.
But that doesn't really line up. So, no. Yeah. No. Yeah, I think that it would be difficult for them to do. I'm not sure. Now, it's possible that the announcement that he was for season two was just to throw us off. And actually, it's only for this episode, and then we're not going to see him much anymore. That's certainly possible. The time doesn't quite line up anymore, because here we are 7 years later. Spock says the accident happened 6 months ago. Even if you figure a year or so has passed since the time Pike was on Borath, you're still only at about 8 years, 8.5 years, maybe. You're not at 10 anyway, so that doesn't quite line up. And I think this probably happened because they wanted to use Balance of Terror as the episode where they show what would happen if he changed his future, and that means, yeah, they can't jump a whole 10 years. It could also be that they just have trouble on Borath keeping time because of all the time crystals around them, and so, you know, 7 years seems like 10 to them, and something was lost in translation. I don't know. But I hope that they're not slowly pushing us into a pre-TOS TOS, because...
Oh, absolutely. I would be very upset, honestly. I think it would ruin all the goodwill that they've created for the show, especially with too many fans. And this episode, again, just seems to be the complete antithesis to that in the first place.
Well, you know, I want characters like La'an back, because I really like La'an. I don't want to see these characters go away. But I can also see people at the studio looking at dollar signs and thinking, you know, if we got the old band back together, we recaptured that original series magic in the 21st century, maybe we can make more money. I can see people thinking that and fudging the timeline in a way where things no longer match up, and then actually harming the franchise in that sense, in terms of its overall cohesiveness.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know. I certainly don't think in season two we're going to have this shift. I think season two is going to be getting Una back, Pike coming to terms with the fact that he can't not change his future. We've got the Cybok storyline that I'm sure will be revisited. Yeah. And also probably La'an. I don't think La'an is going to disappear from the show. I think maybe she's going to be gone for a couple of episodes at the beginning or something, and probably end up back.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that's coming, and it would just be a mistake to disregard what you've built here and throw it away for something that would just be, I'm going to say it, it would be stupid. It would be a really stupid idea. And there's no reason to, because you've got enough time, if you got plenty of time to tell great stories with a cast that everybody's loving and a show that everybody's loving. So, I've heard very few, major critiques of this show so far. I've heard some minor critiques here and there for people, but most of them come down to different things that we've kind of like discussed here, or just in general. So I loved this episode. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was a great way to wrap up the season. I thought it was a brilliant use of a previous Star Trek episode in much the same way that Trials and Tribulations did with that. So to me, this is a 5 out of 5. I give this full marks, It's absolutely the best episode of the season, but it is also the best episode of the season to me because it is built on everything that this show had been building towards. And that's good writing when it comes to especially the character of Pike. And now him and Captain Patel are at odds. You know, that's really interesting. Now, you know, he's lost Una. That's really interesting. So there's just so many great places. I can't wait for season two. And I'm just crossing my fingers that when we meet the Klingons again, they actually look like Klingons in season two. So
I hope so. Okay, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now about do you mean they look like the Klingons from the original series or the Klingons from the Next Generation?
Either one.
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to do with that. I'm sure they will not look like the Discovery Klingons. I don't think.
That's my hope.
Yeah, we will see. Yeah, I'm with you. I love this episode. My only real reservation is, like I said, Kirk didn't quite feel like Kirk to me. I thought he was good enough for the purpose of this story. But if I were to see Wesley playing Kirk frequently, I'll have to warm up to it. And then the other thing is, like you said, the time crystal is a bit of a fantasy element, but the time crystal originated in Discovery. So to use it here is perfectly natural. It's expected. It works fine for me. It's one of those things that I just go with it. But I do wish that there was a more scientific explanation. And I'm laughing at myself because I'm just thinking about slingshotting around the sun and whether that's actually a scientific explanation or not.
No, it's not, but it feels Star Trek-y
it
science,
feels
right?
More Star Trek-y. That's right. But yeah, I thought this episode was wonderful. And I think that to put this episode together the way they did took a lot of time, a lot of effort. I think it was quite difficult, and I think a lot of people watching it may not appreciate what the writers did here in merging Strange New Worlds and the original series and giving us a retelling of a classic story in a way that at times completely mirrors the original and then at other times goes its own way to tell this alternate story. So I thought it was really great, and I'm going to give it 10 servings of leftovers that taste even better than the night before.
Man, that sounds delicious.
All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on A Quality of Mercy. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're already a member, you know how it works, but if not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come up. If not, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're joining, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. We do that because we don't want it just to be yet another Star Trek group on Facebook. It is an extension of the discussions here on the podcast, and you'll see a post for this episode on the timeline, and you can share your comments with fellow listeners there and also with Matthew and me, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. If you'd like to send us email, you can go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and that'll come to Matthew and me by Pony Express. And in social media, on Instagram, Twitter, everywhere, you can find us under the username TrekFM. So, Matthew, when you're not climbing through the Jefferies tubes trying to sneak a peek at Scotty, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, when I am not doing that, of course, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network in the 602 Club, which is our part of the network that doesn't have anything to do with Star Trek, and we talk about all those other fandoms we love, so I hope you'll check that out. I'm doing Warp 5, where we both talk about Star Trek Enterprise. We've got The Orb, where we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Literary Tracks about the books and the comics of Star Trek, and, of course, we did The Artificial Tango as we were talking about Star Trek Picard Season 2. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, two shows. One is called Outpost. I did that with Drea Kaufman. It's a completed show about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. one chapter at a time. And then Aggressive Negotiations is a Star Wars podcast that I do with John Mills. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out why your quarters aren't quite as big as Captain Pike's and where you can get his recipes, where can we find you?
I don't think anyone's quarters are as big as Pike's, Matthew. I mean, I think it's season two. It's he's going to have like six tables. There's going to be like a whole dining room over on the other side. And
yeah, he's going to get an upgrade.
Yeah. A wine cellar, all kinds of stuff in there.
Oh, that would be awesome. Where that's one place we've never seen on the Enterprise is the wine cellar.
That's true. That's true. Maybe yeah. Season two. When I am not working on refurbishing my quarters, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all the shows with you, which you mentioned, and also Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time, and there's Interphase, and if you'd like to hear my thoughts on Star Trek in general, check those out. Look through the back catalog. You can find me on past episodes of all sorts of shows on there as well. And if you would like to chat about Star Trek, I'd love to talk to you in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That is my username everywhere in social media, but Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to hear from you there. If you would like to help us keep this show and everything on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to get involved and how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. It takes a great deal of money to produce and distribute these shows. And the past couple of years through the pandemic have been quite tough. So we could definitely use your help. And I want to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us right now. We would not be here without you. Well, Matthew, we have reached the end of the mission of season one of Strange New Worlds. And I'm wondering where the ship is going to take us next.
Chris, regardless of where it takes us, I think there's only one thing left to say to get us ready, is saddle up and lock and load.